Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Plato's The Republic is one of the foundational works of Western philosophy, presented as a dramatic dialogue led by Socrates. Written in classical Athens, it uses a discussion about justice to explore far larger questions. What makes a life good? How should a community be governed? And what kind of education forms wise and responsible citizens? This unabridged, complete edition preserves the full scope of Plato's argument, including famous passages such as the allegory of the cave and the proposal of philosopher rulers. Rather than offering a simple political blueprint, the book works on several levels at once: ethical inquiry, psychological theory, social criticism, and a meditation on knowledge itself. Readers encounter a carefully constructed conversation that moves from everyday intuitions about fairness to a challenging vision of an ordered soul and an ordered city. Whether approached as philosophy, political theory, or literature, The Republic remains a demanding and rewarding text that continues to shape debates about power, virtue, education, and truth. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, defining justice beyond common opinion. The Republic begins with an apparently straightforward question: what is justice and why should anyone choose it? Plato frames the inquiry through competing definitions offered by different speakers, each reflecting a recognizable social stance. Some treat justice as telling the truth and paying debts, others as helping friends and harming enemies, and still others as the advantage of the stronger, meaning whatever benefits those in power. Socrates challenges these views not by rhetorical dismissal, but by testing them against consistency and consequences. The dialogue pushes readers to see that everyday definitions often rely on vague assumptions about harm, loyalty, and authority. A key move is separating appearance from reality. People may seem just because of reputation, fear of punishment, or social reward, yet still lack genuine virtue. This sets up the deeper problem of motivation, namely whether justice is valuable in itself or only for what it brings. By tightening the definitions and exposing contradictions, Plato shows justice cannot be reduced to convention, law, or brute power. Instead, it must relate to a stable standard of goodness and to the internal condition of the person who acts. The opening debate, therefore, functions as a philosophical training ground, teaching readers how rigorous questioning can overturn confident but shallow beliefs. Secondly, the city and speech as a mirror of the soul. To clarify justice, Plato builds an imagined city and examines how justice might appear on a larger scale. This method, often called the city and speech, is not simply political speculation but a diagnostic tool. By asking what roles, institutions, and habits make a city function well, the dialogue creates an analogy for what makes an individual life coherent and healthy. The city develops from basic needs to increasing complexity, and with complexity come tensions around desire, status, and conflict. Plato links social disorder to internal disorder, when appetites, ambitions, and reason compete without hierarchy, both people and communities become unstable. The division of the city into distinct classes aligns with a psychological model in which different parts of the soul have different aims. Justice, on this view, is not mere rule, following, but a kind of harmony where each part does its proper work and does not usurp the role of another. The argument invites readers to think structurally about ethical life. Instead of focusing only on isolated actions, it asks whether a person has an integrated character and whether a society cultivates integration or fragmentation. The city analogy also highlights that personal virtue and civic design are intertwined because education, incentives, and culture shape what citizens become. Thirdly, education, culture, and the formation of character. A central theme in the Republic is that justice depends on how people are formed, not only on laws or punishments. Plato devotes extensive attention to education, beginning with early childhood and extending to advanced intellectual training. He treats stories, music, poetry, physical training, and social habits as powerful forces that can either tune the soul toward moderation and courage or distort it toward excess and vanity. The controversial critique of certain kinds of poetry is best understood as a concern about imitation and emotional contagion. Art can normalize flawed models of heroism, encourage uncontrolled passions, or portray the gods and leaders as unworthy of respect. Plato's educational program aims to align feeling with reason so that moral perception becomes reliable. He also emphasizes selection and progression, arguing that not everyone should receive the same training and that a community must identify those capable of higher understanding. Later stages of education culminate in mathematics and dialectic, disciplines meant to cultivate precision, intellectual honesty, and the capacity to question assumptions. For modern readers, these sections raise enduring issues about media influence, civic schooling, and the purpose of liberal education. Even when one rejects Plato's prescriptions, the book offers a rigorous framework for thinking about how culture forms desires and how education can serve either freedom or manipulation. Fourthly, philosopher rulers and the problem of legitimate authority. Plato's most famous political claim is that a well-governed city requires rulers who love wisdom more than power. And the idea of philosopher rulers is not an argument for intellectual elitism alone, but a response to the instability of leadership driven by appetite, honor-seeking, or factional loyalty. Plato worries that without a deep grasp of what is good, leaders will confuse short-term advantage with genuine benefit and will treat the city as a tool for personal gain. He therefore connects legitimate authority to knowledge, especially knowledge of stable standards rather than shifting opinion. The dialogue also explores the practical obstacles to this ideal. Philosophers often appear useless or threatening in ordinary politics, and societies may corrupt the very people best suited to guide them. The proposed solution includes communal responsibilities for the guardian class, strict expectations around conduct, and an education that discourages greed. For contemporary readers, these chapters provoke hard questions about expertise, democracy, propaganda, and civic trust. What counts as competence to govern, and how should a society evaluate it? How can leaders be insulated from corrupt incentives without becoming unaccountable? Plato does not offer easy institutional fixes, but he provides a penetrating analysis of how power and character interact. The result is a lasting lens for judging leadership, not by charisma, but by disciplined judgment and moral purpose. Lastly, knowledge, reality, and the allegory of the cave. The Republic ultimately argues that justice and good governance require a transformation in how we understand reality. Plato distinguishes opinion from knowledge and uses vivid images to explain intellectual assent. The allegory of the cave portrays people chained to appearances, mistaking shadows for truth, and resisting the painful process of turning toward what is real. This is paired with the metaphor of the divided line and the emphasis on the form of the good as the highest object of understanding, the source of intelligibility and value. These passages link ethics to epistemology. Without clearer vision of what is good, choices remain guided by habit, social pressure, or immediate pleasure. Plato also describes the difficulty of returning to the cave, meaning the challenge of bringing insight back into public life where it may be mocked or punished. In modern terms, the cave can be read as a critique of misinformation, ideological capture, and passive consumption of culture. Yet Plato's point is not only negative, it is also constructive. He sketches a disciplined path of learning that cultivates humility, logical rigor, and independence from mere approval. This topic is where the book transcends political theory and becomes a guide to intellectual character. It asks readers to examine whether their beliefs are inherited and comfortable, or tested and grounded, and whether they are willing to pursue truth despite social cost. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want more than a quick overview of ancient ideas, students of philosophy, politics, ethics, and education, as well as general readers willing to wrestle with a demanding argument. It will benefit your life by sharpening how you reason about fairness, leadership, personal discipline, and the relationship between inner character and outward success. Plato does not merely ask what rules to follow, he asks what kind of person you are becoming and how your environment trains your desires. That shift from rule-based morality to character and structure is useful in everyday decisions, from career choices to civic participation. The Republic is also worth buying compared to similar classics because it combines several genres in one sustained work: a gripping dialogue, a moral psychology, a theory of education, a critique of political dysfunction, and a lasting account of how knowledge differs from mere opinion. Many books treat these themes separately. Plato interlocks them so each part illuminates the rest. An unabridged, complete edition matters here because the power of the work lies in its careful progression, where later insights depend on earlier tests of assumptions. If you want a classic that still challenges modern complacency, this one earns its place on your shelf. If you would like to support Plato, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.